smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Many, if not most of us, have had the experience at one time or another of noticing that our dog isn't eating or perhaps has vomited. And it invariably happens at a time when you're trying to rush out the door for a work appointment or an appointment of your own. And then you have that horrible nagging question. Should I deal with this right away? Should I drop everything and take the dog to the vet? Or will my dog probably be okay a few hours from now? I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast, where today's guest is Dr. Robert Silver, Chief of Staff and Lead Veterinarian for Boulder's Natural Animal, an integrative wellness center in Boulder, Colorado, which combines conventional Western medical therapies and alternative therapies for dogs and cats. Welcome, Dr. Silver.
Thank you, Joanne.
So there's a lot to discuss here, and I know that you can't diagnose imaginary dogs on this interview, but in general, what are some basic ways that we as dog owners can ascertain whether or not our dog needs immediate medical attention or whether there are some things we can try on our own at home?
Well, that's an interesting question. There are some guidelines that pet owners can use to help them figure out if they need to bring their pet to the vet right away or if they can wait to see if the problem will resolve itself either on its own or with the assistance of some home remedies. And one very important parameter that we find with dogs and with cats, although I know this show is not about cats, is appetite. You know, for instance, an animal who has a GI upset and has diarrhea but still has an appetite, to me, is not nearly as serious a potentially serious problem as a dog who has diarrhea and who won't eat, and, you know, especially who may not have been eating for several days at a time. Also, if the stool itself is frank blood. Now, we can see small amounts of blood in a stool, and it can be normal. Dogs eat a lot of things, and, you know, as they pass through the digestive tract, they could cause, you know, some spotting, that sort of a thing. But if there's, you know, frank red blood coming out, you know, with the diarrhea, that's probably not a very good sign. The consistency of the stool itself, you know, if it's squirty, like it's just liquid and it's all over the place, well, I'm not so sure you want your dog to stay at home anyway, even if a home remedy would work.
You raise a good point there.
Mm-hmm. So, and if the stool is a very dark, almost black, tarry appearance, oftentimes that denotes that there's bleeding into the GI tract, into the gastrointestinal tract up higher around the stomach or the small intestine. And what happens is the blood that goes into the digestive tract then becomes digested, which is what causes it to look so dark and kind of pasty and tarry. That is also not a good sign. But, you know, your dog who maybe got into the trash or, you know, you were having a party and too many guests were, you know, being kind to the dog and comes up with, you know, some diarrhea, but still has an appetite and looks active and wags his tail and, you know, is interested in life. You know, that type of an individual probably would respond very well to some very simple approaches to managing his digestive problem.
And we'll get into those in just a moment, but my first question is this. If you sense that your dog has some sort of digestive problem, either vomiting or diarrhea, should you remove their food and immediately put them on a diet of, say, rice or something that's very easy to digest and or is binding?
For most animals, that's correct, because as I tell my clients, when the animal's vomiting and when he's got diarrhea, it's probably a sign that the digestive system is saying, hey, whoa, let's slow things down a little bit while I kind of get better here. And so for most animals who don't have, you know, specific types of medical conditions, like, let's say, diabetes, you know, a 24-hour fast will do no harm at all. And will definitely, you know, reduce the burden on the bowel, so it has some time to recover and heal.
And probably reduce the burden on your carpeting too, right?
That would be nice, yes. But during this 24-hour fasting period, and many times they can be fasted as long as 48 hours, I don't recommend, you know, a hardcore no food at all sort of a fast. What I recommend is what I call the rice water fast. And in the rice water fast, what we have found is that when you boil white rice, and I don't mean minute rice, and I don't mean brown rice, but white rice, like jasmine or basmati, when you boil that, you'll notice that the water will start to turn a nice creamy color. Now, depending on the altitude that you're boiling it at, you know, that creamy color might occur sooner than 20 minutes, but usually it's around 15 or 20 minutes. Well, that creamy color contains some special peptides, types of short proteins that are found in the rice that actually affect the bowel and instruct the cells that line the bowel to reabsorb water, therefore making the stool firmer. So, of course, you know, if we're fasting, we're talking about a food fast, and with diarrhea, you lose water, you can become dehydrated. So certainly giving, making sure your animal is drinking plenty of fluids during this time period is very important. And many dogs like the taste of the rice water, but for those dogs who don't, I recommend getting some chicken baby food or turkey baby food or beef baby food, but not veal baby food for humane reasons. And you could put maybe a half a teaspoon to a teaspoon mixed in with the rice water, and it makes kind of a nice chicken broth, which makes the water more attractive for the dog to drink and provide some electrolytes and basic nutrients. We don't want to starve the dog. We just want to rest the GI tract a bit. So the rice water fast for 24 hours. You can then take that white rice that you've made the rice water from, and you can cook it to completion. And when we're cooking for a dog that inhales its food versus chews, it's recommended that you cook the rice pretty wet. You don't. Dogs don't really appreciate al dente rice. We want to cook the rice so wet that it fractures those grains of rice and pre-digests them for the dog, so they're more likely to do their good job. And the rice is binding as well as having that specialized peptide that opens up the chloride channel in the colon. So this way you're giving them small little rice balls, maybe mixed with a little bit of chicken baby food and some rice water, as their only nourishment. My recommendations are to get some Acidophilus. Now, Acidophilus are the beneficial bacteria that are commonly found in yogurt. That's what everyone, you know, whenever I mention Acidophilus, everyone always says, oh, you mean like what's in yogurt? Well, yes, it is like what is in yogurt. But yogurt generally does not contain high enough inoculants of the good bacteria, and in order for the good bacteria to do more than just, you know, maintain you know, a certain level of bacteria, but if you're trying to treat an actual problem where the dog has diarrhea, maybe ate some bad food and has some overgrowth of pathogenic bacteria, you want to give them a really high dosage of the Acidophilus. Well, if you're fasting them on that rice water fast day, how are you going to get the Acidophilus into them? Well, the best way, in my opinion, is to mix it in with those little rice balls with the chicken baby food. And that can be a very good way to help to improve and firm up your dog's stools. There is an herbal mixture that can be used. There's something called psyllium seed. It's spelled P-S-Y-L-L-I-U-M. Psyllium seed is the active ingredient in a commercially available product for humans called Metamucil. But Metamucil contains sugar and other things in it. The psyllium seed absorbs water. And so when you give it to an animal who has diarrhea, basically it helps to firm up the stools and helps to reduce fluid losses. And it's very bland tasting. So you could mix maybe a quarter teaspoon to a teaspoon of psyllium into these rice balls, and that'll also help to firm the stool up.
Now, is all of this something you'd recommend at the first sight of diarrhea, or is this if your dog's really had diarrhea for a few days?
I guess it depends on what kind of tolerance you have for diarrhea in your
house.
That's
a good point, too.
Personally, you know, I'm a vet, so I'm trained to do stuff. Then, you know, sure, you can wait 24 hours and see if it goes away, you know, if you're okay with that. And other, you know, or you could start to modify the diet right away. Instead of feeding them their regular food that night, you could give them a, you know, a meal that consists basically of maybe 50% white rice and 50% cooked chicken cut up and cubed. Something like that. If the diarrhea persists the next day, then you could move on to a more intensive approach with the 24-hour to 48-hour rice water fast with acidophilus and psyllium added.
Makes sense. Now, is it important to ascertain if your dog is in any pain? And if so, how do you figure that out?
Well, that's not always so easy. Dogs many times will not show their pain.
They're pretty stoic.
They can be. Then again, there's a bunch of weenies out there, too. But they can be pretty darn stoic. And many times it's even difficult for a trained veterinarian who has many years of experience looking at dogs in pain to ascertain whether they're painful or not. But there are a few things that you could try. You could gently compress its tummy. If the dog is standing, let's say, putting your hands on either side behind the rib cage or the tummy and just kind of gently compressing it. If the dog fights you and kind of splints its abdomen, that may be an indication that there is some discomfort, you know, that he's, you know, acting against or, you know, counterbalancing your pressure. That would be certainly one sign. Some dogs will pant, although panting is a non-specific symptom, and it could mean excitement and happiness too. But panting can oftentimes be a sign of pain. Sometimes trembling, you might see their rear legs tremble or something like that. That can be a sign of pain, although it could also be a sign of excitement. Some dogs will become very restless. You know, they'll be pacing around the room. They can't get comfortable. They won't sit down. And in some dogs that have quite a bit of abdominal pain, you might find them walking around with their back arched. Some dogs get aggressive when they're painful. So that could be a signal, you know, that something's wrong. You know, if the dog starts snarling or snaps at you when you're maybe going near a part of its body that is painful or uncomfortable.
And the good news here is we know our dogs. When your dog is exhibiting a behavior that's really unusual, you want to pay attention to that.
It is important to pay attention. It's important to be able to, if you do wind up needing to take your dog to the veterinarian, it's important to be able to be a good observer, you know, because your dog can't talk to the vet. And so, you know, to be able to tell them, you know, the frequency of stools, what the consistency of the stool is, the color, the odor. And of course, you know, I can't imagine how many people come in here with the complaint that their animals have diarrhea and they don't bring me a sample. A sample can help the veterinarian do a microscopic examination of the stool to see if there's some sort of a pathogen or a parasite in there that can be treated.
Now, let's leave the world of stools behind us for just a moment and talk about some of the other conditions that are fairly common in dogs for which pet owners can try a home remedy first. Let's take itching, for instance.
Okay. Itching is potentially a complicated problem or could be quite simple. If it's something like dry skin, then it's relatively simple. We need to find out why the skin is dry and try to support it. One way to support dry skin is by adding healthy, fresh oils to the food. Because if your dog is eating nothing but processed kibble, no matter how good the company tries to convince you of the quality of the food, it's still been manufactured and processed and cooked. And a lot of the delicate nutrients that make up healthy nutrition have been processed out of it. So adding a little bit of oil to the diet, maybe a quarter of a teaspoon of some flaxseed oil to maybe a teaspoon to a tablespoon, depending on the animal's size and the animal's ability to tolerate the addition of oil in the diet.
Would you do that on a daily basis?
Absolutely.
And flaxseed oil specifically, or are other oils good as well?
There's a lot of different choices. I prefer the flax seed oil because it contains a nice balance between omega-6 and omega-3 oils. I think that, you know, for a comprehensive program of supplementation with oils, something that provides omega-6 fatty acids, omega-3 fatty acids, and omega-3 fatty acids from fish would give a full complement of the fatty acids that are important for healthy skin, hair coat, heart, kidneys, liver, eyesight, all of those things, neurologic function. But certainly even something as simple as safflower oil or corn oil, which is a pure omega-6 oil and could tend to promote inflammation in the wrong individual, could very easily help to improve the quality of the skin and hair coat, moisturize it more so the itching would stop. On the other hand, if a dog has allergies, which I believe are becoming an epidemic in this country, I can't believe how many allergic dogs I see every day, whereas 20 years ago when I was, you know, in the early part of my practice, I barely saw any. But if a dog has allergies, it's much more complicated because sometimes these allergies can be extremely severe and intractable and non-responsive to almost any therapy, including very strong steroid pharmaceutical therapy. But for many dogs out there, it's just a minor little, you know, little itchiness that occurs on a seasonal nature, comes and goes, and isn't a big problem. For those dogs, the use of antihistamines, you know, certainly looking at the use of oils, seeing if there's dry hair coat, adding fish oils can also be very good for an animal with allergies and itchy skin. But antihistamines, as far as an over-the-counter product that's readily accessible to humans and dog owners alike, you know, at your pharmacy, and Benadryl, you know, which is very safe and has been used for years in animals, is a very good antihistamine to use. Another good antihistamine to use is called chlorpheniramine. And both of those can work well. There's probably 10 antihistamines that are available to the consumer over the counter, all of which are safe to use in dogs, and any one of which might be effective.
But in what kind of dosages? Because, of course, they're sold for use in humans.
Well, interestingly enough, one thing that we do find is that some dogs may not respond to the Benadryl. I'll have people come in and say, oh, yeah, I tried antihistamines and they don't work. And turns out, you know, that the dog didn't respond to Benadryl, but lo and behold, would respond to another antihistamine, such as chlorpheniramine or Claritin or Tavist or Allegra. We've got a lot of, and now Zyrtec apparently is an over-the-counter product. And I'm not promoting these brands. I can't pronounce the name of the generic chemicals that are in them. There are a number of different antihistamines out there that are safe to use in dogs, and that if the Benadryl or the chlorpheniramine don't work, then you should consult with your veterinarian for some of the other OTC antihistamines that are available. The Benadryl, getting back to that, the dosage for Benadryl is much higher in the dog than it is in the human. For instance, your standard human dosage, which is a 25 milligram tablet or capsule of Benadryl, is enough to treat a 25 to 50 pound dog. We use 1 milligram per pound up to 3 times a day for Benadryl. So a 25 milligram tablet, good for 25 pounds. In fact, in some cases, you could use twice that much. You could use 50 milligrams up to 3 times a day in a 25-pound dog safely. You may have some initial drowsiness, because, you know, they use Benadryl as part of some of the sleep medicines, but the animal will get over that rather rapidly. And for most animals, this is safe advice to give. I am aware that I'm speaking to an audience that I don't know, and I want to make sure that above all, the advice that I give is going to be safe and effective for a wide range of critters that are out there.
Great. Let's address one more problem, and it's not so much a problem for the dog, but can be a problem for his human companions, and that's bad breath, halitosis in dogs. Do you have any suggestions for what people might try to address that problem?
The breath, bad breath, usually comes from two different sources, one or the other or both. One source that we most commonly associate with bad breath is dental disease. And dental disease is manageable. I don't know about preventable, possibly. And if people are so motivated, they can do in-home toothbrushing, in-home dental care. They make little finger toothbrushes or little doggy-sized toothbrushes, and they make, you know, chicken or beef-flavored toothpaste or different types of enzymatic toothpastes that are pleasant-tasting to the animals. And to do that on a daily basis can help to prevent the development and buildup of plaque and tartar, which then develop into the halitosis. Certainly getting your dog's teeth cleaned, which many times needs to be under anesthesia, which we need to make sure if we're going to be using anesthesia in the animals, it's being done in a safe and responsible way. But many times the teeth need to be cleaned first before in-home dental care is going to be that effective. Dogs don't floss, certainly keeping their teeth clean, dogs can chew on, there's chew toys that can also help to keep teeth clean. Although there are certain risks associated with the feeding of raw bones, many people do find that the feeding of raw bones can also help to keep teeth clean. There are some risks associated, and people need to be cautious about that. And there also are some herbal extracts that contain things like celery seed oil and parsley seed oil. And they make some that are specifically for dogs, and they make some that are for people that work just fine in dogs. And these are basically, you know, Band-Aids that, you know, help to neutralize the bad odors. It doesn't, you know, the bad odor is a sign that we need to look at the teeth and look at the dental health and take appropriate measures. But there are some, you know, some short-term symptomatic approaches that can help to make his breath a little more sweetly smelling.
That's great. Thank you so much for all of these insights. Do you have a website that we can direct people to if they want more information on any of this?
The website for my veterinary practice is just the veterinary practice's name spelled out, BouldersNaturalAnimal.com. Right now the website is, we're doing some construction on it, so you won't be able to get on, but we're working our tails off trying to get it up and running again. So that would be a good source, and we'll have some contact information and things like that there for your listeners to go to.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Robert Silver, thanks so much for being on the Good Dog Podcast today and for all that great information for dog owners.
Well, thank you, Joanne Green.
And once again, Dr. Robert Silver is Chief of Staff and Lead Veterinarian for Boulder's Natural Animal. It's an integrative wellness center in Boulder, Colorado, which combines conventional Western medical therapies and alternative therapies for dogs and cats. I'm Joanne Green, inviting you to browse through all of the options for entertainment and information at smarterpodcasts.com.